Thanks so much, Beth. Ben and I are just really thankful for the opportunity to be here with y'all today. We hope that we're able to give y'all some resources, some tips, but also just begin this really important dialogue about technology and our children. I have babies and toddlers, and Ben has babies and toddlers, so we're not necessarily experts on parenting adolescents, but the majority of our clinical experience has been working with adolescents and parents and families. And within that, there's seriously not a day that goes by that I'm working that I don't have to address issues of technology and apps and iPhones and iPads, and how that impacts families and parenting. So today, that's what we're doing. We're dialoguing. We are not experts, but we've done a ton of research. We're super passionate about helping people. And so we hope that today that is what comes out. Matt Chandler is a pastor in Dallas at the Village Church. And he said this about parenting, and I think it just really summarizes our heart today. Discipline should be forward-thinking and a part of a relationship between parents and children. Don't be a lazy parent. And here's what I mean by that. Good behavior in the store, although it's extremely nice, is not our end goal. Adequate social functioning is not the end goal of parents. The end goal of Christian parents are hearts and minds that love God, serve God, and follow God. And that is birthed out of a relationship. So today, we're going to spend a lot of time talking about the relationship piece with you and your kids. To do that, there's a pretty large gap sometimes, especially in regards to technology. So we have a clip that we would like to show you.
Did y'all get my group text at the party?
No.
What kind of party?
Like a coming home party. It's a surprise party, so don't say anything.
I'll come to the party, but if you want me to come to the party, don't send me a group text. Because then, look, people start talking, and my phone keeps buzzing.
All right, here we go.
Group texts are the worst. They're like a terrible technological snowball coming down a mountain, and you can't stop it.
I'm not into wasting time listening to Tom and Jerry talk about who they think's going to win the Super Bowl.
The cartoon characters?
I thought there was the guys that put that ice cream.
First one person responds, then someone tries to be funny, then we get off the subject.
I mean, it'll be midnight, and they're still talking about it. Zzz.
What was the original conversation? No one knows. No one cares. Stop having a conversation on my phone.
You can just send one text out. It hits everybody.
You sent one to me?
Yes.
I got the text.
Good job, John Luke.
I like texts. Group texts.
Oh, crap. Here we go.
With emojis.
With what?
What is that?
Pictures.
Emojis? Emojis.
Like smiley faces and people and...
Yeah, all right. Didn't y'all say y'all had to go to the airport?
Animals sometimes.
I would hate to see y'all go, but you don't want to be late.
All right.
John Luke, let's roll.
Emojis. Little pictures.
Pipe down, son.
Okay, we live in a day and age where we can seriously communicate with people just via pictures rather than using words, thanks to the emoji invention. But today we're going to highlight seven really kind of key apps that your kids may be using currently or would like to use. My goal in this is to highlight what is it, just in case some of you don't know, what the dangers are, and then what can you do. There's going to be some overlap in the what you can do piece that we're going to hopefully have as a major takeaway for today. So the first one is Instagram, probably one that most of y'all are familiar with. It is an app that allows you to instantaneously post pictures and videos, the videos up to a 15-second segment. And then what's awesome is you get to filter it where everybody looks really awesome. I even love that feature as an adult. I love the black and white especially. It covers a multitude of sins. But the dangers of Instagram specifically for adolescents are just the desire to really seek after the likes and the comments. There can obviously be an avenue for harassment, but the biggest thing that I see clinically are kids feeling left out because of things that they see on Instagram or feeling like they don't measure up? And so this is not to tell your children, hey, don't Instagram when you go, you know, to that, you know, birthday party. But it's just to help our kids be mindful of others and know that when they post something, there is an impact of that on the other side. The goal is also not likes and comments. So if your child wants to post a picture or a selfie to see how many likes they can get, you need to have a conversation with why is that the goal? You know, what is the goal behind why you're posting? One of the biggest dangers is if the location feature is turned on, which a lot of kids love to tag where they are. But if your child's account is not set to private and the location service is enabled, anyone who's on Instagram can find out where your child is. It's very, very easy to disable that feature. And I would encourage you to do that on this app as well as others. So what can you do? If your kid's on Instagram, get on Instagram. I say that and some people are like, well, I don't want to use Instagram. That's fine. You don't have to. In fact, your kids would probably appreciate you not commenting on every picture they post or liking every picture. But that does not mean you can't be a presence. And if your kid is in that app, you need to be in that app. And you need to know who they're following and who's following them. And then, you know, if you want to use it, use it. It's a great photo app and it's fun. But definitely don't feel like that is an island that you can't be a part of. You need to jump in on that. Make sure that your child's account is set to private. If it has not been set to private in the past, they could have a ton of followers that they don't even know in real life. There's no way to allow somebody to unfollow them except to block them after they have after they've accepted the follower request. That person would never be notified if they were blocked, to my knowledge. So it's okay if somebody random is following your child, block them. You know, like make sure that you and your child go through and make sure that they know these people in real life. Now, some of your daughters may love to follow people like Taylor Swift. If you're okay with that, that's great, but make sure that if they're following like 29 other famous people that you kind of understand the heart behind why they're doing that. Okay, the next app, and we'll have time for questions if you have any specifically, Snapchat. This one is a little bit more nerve-wracking than Instagram because it's similar in that you can post pictures and images, but then they can go away. Most images only last for 10 seconds. I think they can stay up to 30 seconds or a minute. You and I all know, though, that anything that's on the internet isn't necessarily always permanently deleted. But kids think so. Kids love the spontaneity of Snapchat. I told this story last time, but they love the idea of rolling out of bed, seeing their awesome bedhead, snapping a selfie, and sending it to their three best friends, thinking that it's funny. Well, then all of a sudden, one of their best friends decides to screenshot it and then text it to 20 other friends, and all of a sudden their bedhead is the talk of the day at high school, and that really wasn't their intention. And so, great and funny in the context, but your child just always needs to know that it will follow them. Obviously, more serious things are like sexting, taking inappropriate pictures. Snapchat is known for that, but a lot of kids use Snapchat in a really healthy way. But you just need to know it can exist, that they use it in a really negative way. So what can you do? Again, if your child is on Snapchat, set up a Snapchat. it's just the best way to understand their world, be in their world. And then this is the most important piece that you can do, is dialogue with your child about the benefits of critical thinking. I know that's funny. It's probably something that they hear in school a lot. But they are wired, because they are not fully cognitively developed yet, to just love the idea of, I'm going to post that and not think about the consequences. So the more conversations we can have about, hey, what would the impact of that picture or that video be, is really, really super important. Tumblr. This is one that some of you may be aware of, others of you may not. The most common reason that kids get on Tumblr, according to research, is that parents are not on it. So obviously that's a major red flag. It is a microblogging website and app that allows you to share pictures, text, videos, and it unfortunately cannot be set to private. So they can have followers from everywhere who can comment and share their post. You can apparently set an individual post to private, but if your child doesn't know how to do that, their whole blog is public. So what you can do is know and monitor which blogs they follow. You don't have a lot of control over who follows your child. And then just discuss the potential issues of your child being exposed to explicit material. Tumblr does not have a filter. And so it is one of the avenues that your children are most likely to view porn, nude pictures, other explicit material. And so you just need to know that without a filter, you have a lot less ability to monitor what they see. Again, one of the primary reasons Tumblr is so popular is because parents are not there. So let's change that and get on Tumblr. Twitter. Twitter is probably one of my favorite social medias. Ben confessed earlier that it's definitely his. What did you call it?
It's my daily newspaper.
Twitter is Ben's daily newspaper. It's great because it offers really quick, brief messages instantaneously around the world. So you can find out immediately what's happening on CNN, what's happening in the sports world. However, tweets are not as easily protected. And so I told this story last time, but in 2012, there was a high school senior who was a highly recruited cornerback headed to Michigan, and his scholarship was stripped from him because of a tweet that he tweeted. Now, his account was private, but what he didn't realize is that he had a lot of followers that he had accepted that obviously were offended by his tweet and that his coach found out about. And so he lost his scholarship, and it was a devastating reality. Now, we know that 15, 16, 17-year-olds say and do things that are inappropriate, but Twitter, unfortunately, could require that follows them forever. And so we just want to make sure that we educate our children on the reality of what they tweet. It's also a source of bullying within schools. So just make sure you know what your children is saying, who your children is saying that to. And again, the best way to do that is to have a presence there. Periscope. How many of y'all have heard of Periscope? Okay, a few. It's one of the newest apps, and it is probably the most dangerous for adolescents currently. Not because it's bad. There's actually some really cool features to it. What it's designed to do, according to the creators, is to explore the world in real time through someone's eyes. That's awesome. Like, you can know what the Mavs game is like from somebody who's actually at the Mavs games while you're watching it on TV. Like, that's really fun. But then the other side of that is you could, click over to Florida and see, somebody making out with their girlfriend, and that's not cool. And so Periscope is just really dangerous in the fact that you can't really monitor what your children are viewing. So here's what Common Sense Media said about Periscope. Because the potential for exposure to inappropriate content is so great, it isn't appropriate for young children or tweens, and parents of teens might want to consider access on a case-by-case basis. It can open up the world, which we know is great, but it can also showcase you things that you might not want your kids to see. So one of the things you can do to protect your children if you do allow them to be on Periscope, they do recommend that children under 17 are not on it. But if you allow your children to be on it, ensure that the location sharing feature is off. That will prevent anybody from being able to locate your child. And then discuss the app and the expectations of how you would like it to be used. Again, the difficulty here is monitoring what other people post. You can monitor what your kids post, but you can't always monitor what they see. Pinterest, one of my favorites. Nothing really, really super wrong with Pinterest. The same location feature, you just want to disable that so people can't find you. But the thing that we're realizing with Pinterest, especially for females, is the comparison game. It creates an avenue for people, for girls especially, to see the latest fashion, to see the skinniest girls, to see these beautiful houses that they want to live in. And none of that is wrong. But if it creates discontentment in our hearts, then we're constantly comparing what we have to what we wish we had, and we're not content. And I know for girls, there's a major identity piece to discontentment. So let your girls be on Pinterest if you want them to. That's totally fine. But here's my recommendation. Monitor who they follow and what boards they create. Help them be creative in the boards that they want, and help them understand the benefits as well as the dangers of creating some of those things. I know that some 17-year-old girls have wedding boards, which is awesome. But if you don't want to spend $500,000 on a wedding, you should probably help her understand that some of those things are completely unrealistic. You know, so know that Pinterest isn't super dangerous except for what it can do to your child's heart. It is it's called a digital bulletin board. So where we used to all cut out magazines and put them on our bulletin board in their room, or Mod Podge them is what we all did, they get to just pin them is what it's called. And it creates this literally digital bulletin board. And you can have as many boards as you want, and people can follow you and repin things. So, okay, GroupMe. This is one that student ministry at Fellowship uses. I know some sports teams use. There, again, is not a lot of negative about GroupMe. What it is it's a text app, and it allows you to create groups that can be texted much easier than if you just went to your normal text feature in your phone. And so, like, the whole cheerleading team can have a GroupMe group, and the communication can be there. The danger is it's a lot harder for parents than to monitor what's being texted. So I'd encourage you to make sure that you know passwords and make sure that your children know that you can check GroupMe just like you can check their normal text messages. The only other app that I want to make sure I touch on, and you'll notice that there's not an image for it because I could not find one, and you'll know why. It's there's several versions of it. Poof, Hidden Apps, Hide It Pro. Basically, if your children download any of those apps, they then have the capabilities to hide your visibility of other apps that they have on their phone. So, for instance, Mom and Dad set a rule that Tommy can't have Snapchat. Tommy downloads Hide It Pro. Then he downloads Snapchat, and Mom and Dad never know. The only way, to our knowledge, that you can tell whether they've downloaded one of those hidden apps is to go to your iTunes purchases. There may be some other avenues, but that's kind of our best way to be able to tell you.
Yeah, you can go into the App Store and find the list kind of near where you would update or something like that, and you see the list of purchased apps by that account, and it's all there.
And Apple is constantly trying to get rid of those. Like Poof apparently no longer exists. But if they bought it prior to Apple removing it from the iTunes store, there was nothing they can do. Like, they still have it on their phones. So that's the one reason that we will list those. We brought up a couple other apps in the last class. Know that there are literally probably hundreds of dangerous hookup apps that I could have told you about, Tinder, some of those other things. And my goal is not to terrify y'all about all of the apps that your kids could find. We're going to give you some resources that help you stay knowledgeable in those that are out there. But these are the main ones that probably your kids are using or would like to use. And so that's why we wanted to touch on those. The main takeaway is if your kid is there, be there. Have a presence on those social media apps. It does not mean that you have to use them, but it has to, I mean, we want you there. So. I'm not sure. I couldn't find one to download myself, even in this research. But to my knowledge, there's a hidden way into it. I don't understand how it works. And then they choose which apps they want to hide. So it doesn't hide all of their apps, because otherwise that would give it away. But you get to choose which apps you want to hide. So It's a great question. I wish I had an answer.
My recommendation would be if you see it on the purchase app, just sit down with that with your child and say, hey, I realize that you've downloaded this. I know it's on your phone. Please show me where.
Yeah. And the same with those photo vaults or video vaults. And those are the same ideas. I think those are a little easier to see. But you can put a video or a photo that you took into a vault, and then they do not show up on a camera roll or, you know, where a parent would normally check. So know that those things exist. Like, there's just a lot of opportunities for kids to hide what they're doing, and a lot of opportunities for adults to hide what they're doing. I say in therapy a lot to families and to individuals and teenagers that we're as sick as our secrets. And as sinners, we like to hide. And so one of the things that we have to do is try to bring that to the light and make sure that your kid knows that there's grace there. Again, going back to cognitive development, like part of their development is screwing up. You know, part of their development is making mistakes. And how we parent in those mistakes is really, really, really significant. But just know that I think that understanding of we're as sick as our secrets is really important. So these are our major takeaways from social media. Know who your children are following and who's following your children. I really, really, really encourage you to not be afraid of helping your child go through those lists of followers and getting rid of some that they don't need to follow. The things that can never be deleted are pictures, videos, texts that are out there, because now we live in a day and age where things can be screenshotted. And we just need our kids to know that safety is one of our biggest concerns, their reputation, and their purity. And with those three things at the heart of the decisions that we make, they may not agree, but that doesn't matter. We make decisions based on the fact that we are trying to parent them well under those three ideas: safety, reputation, and purity. Comparison is the thief of joy. I mentioned this with Pinterest. Somebody way smarter than me said that. But cultivating contentment within our children, I think, is one of the biggest challenges. I even face it with my two-year-old. You know, we go to Walmart, and we have literally a playroom full of toys, and he can't wait for the next thing, you know. And I'm just like, we were just playing at home. And there's going to be constantly something else that is vying for your child's affection. And helping them understand that the next thing is not always what we need to search for, but being able to be content in what we have, in the relationships that we have, in the bodies that we've been given, it's a gift, and it's something that I think we're all striving to do as humans. This is my biggest takeaway for social media. Make sure that real relationships are never replaced by social media relationships. If your children are spending more time on their iPhone, iPad, if they care more about interacting with people on Instagram than they do actually dialoguing with people in real life, or even with y'all as parents and siblings, then that's a major, major red flag. We want to see people investing in real relationships, using social media as a way to foster those, but not for that to be the sole way that they are created. So,
we're going to talk a little bit about privacy and parenting. Yeah. Is there a device in particular, or are you just...
Yeah, we talked about unplugging the internet, but obviously on, like, iPhones, there are... they could just switch over to the wireless. I think you could absolutely change the passcode if his 2 hours was up, and then you would change it back the next morning. I'm a real big fan of unplugging the internet just because I think it's a great, especially on the iPad and the computer. If their time is up, if it's dinner time and then y'all are spending time together, unplug the internet, put the iPad and iPhones in a basket, it'll be okay, you know.
Some computers that have separate login functions do allow you to set up some hourly things like that, and you can find that in the settings thing or to grab an IT guy like I would. But some computers have that function and some don't. So we're going to talk a little bit about privacy and parenting. This is probably one of the most asked questions that I get from parents in session is, what do I do when my child tells me that they have a right to privacy? So I know I'm getting asked this a lot because they are getting asked this a lot. And the first place that I always start out with is that privacy, similar to trust, is earned and it's not guaranteed. The law says your child doesn't have a right to privacy from you until they turn 18. And we know that as parents that their privacy only goes so far. It's the theme that I look back at privacy with is the idea that it's our responsibility to protect you. So when they want privacy, we say privacy as long as you are earning that and we can protect you in it. A couple of things about launching kids. Launching our children means that the end goal is releasing young adults with discernment about technology. And launching our children does not mean releasing young adults who have been completely sheltered from technology. I knew a guy in college that he grew up in a home that only had one computer. It was in a main room in the house. There were no tablets, no smartphones, no gaming systems. Just one computer in the middle of the house. It's a pretty noble effort by mom and dad to protect them from the dangers of being online, to protect him from being the dangers of being online. And the only thing that that computer could be used for was academic purposes, research, paper writing, things like that. That worked really well until he went to college. And when he got to college, he spent $250 on a simple laptop, and he was completely exposed to the entire internet for the first time in his life. And we can all imagine how that played out for him. He had never learned to use technology responsible. And so whether it's us being on apps with our kids or our child's right to privacy, we've got to have this filter in mind that goes, we've got to teach our kids to use technology responsible. Otherwise, they're going to leave our home at 18 with the world at their fingertips that they've never seen before. And they're going to have no idea how to do that responsibly. Our children's earned privacy is constantly changing according to age and responsibility. Hopefully, the idea of launching kids with a level of discernment regarding technology means that as they grow, they get more and more freedom and privacy with their use of technology because they're earning it and they're showing us that they can be trusted in it. So parents start early with regular checks of accounts and devices, reduce the regularity and structure of those checks with age and with responsibility. As we're checking early on, when they get that first cell phone, as we're checking, are they giving us reasons to trust them or are they giving us reasons to know that we've got to monitor more? It's a constantly changing dynamic, but we've got to continue to remind our kids how you handle your cell phone today dictates your access to it tomorrow. We've got to protect you if you're not protecting yourself. Clear expectations and full authenticity. It would only be appropriate in a technology seminar for me to struggle with the clicker. All right. Does your child know your expectations regarding phone, apps, iPad, and computer? Some common questions about how much is too much time, what apps are allowed, what is the device curfew? Mom and dad, do you know passwords? First, practical encouragement. If you guys have not sat down and had a very specific conversation with your kids about your expectations of their use of technology, if you're married, get together with your spouse and go and have that conversation with your children tonight. Decide what are the apps right now that we're going to allow our kids to use and not use. If you say, you know what, Periscope, that's too risky. I'm going to protect my child from that. Write that down as one of the things you're going to communicate to them tonight. Just make a decision. What time are we unplugging the router? What time are we unplugging the router at night? 9 o'clock? Okay. Write that down. Where are we going to turn in our cell phones overnight? We're going to put a basket in mom and dad's room. And that's where they're all going to go. Go ahead and write that down. Have this conversation with your kids tonight and communicate very clear expectations with them for how technology is going to be handled in your house. And then just know, one of the primary challenges to parenting is that our kids are always growing older. And so our challenges as parents change every day. What I do with my four-year-old today is not going to work when he's eight. And so I have to change the way that I parent all the time. That's one of the reasons that parenting is so hard. When we look at the topic of technology, the challenge gets even bigger because not only are our kids growing older, but the landscape is forever changing on technology as well. So we've got two places to keep up with, and that means that this conversation has to be evolving all the time. We have to be in regular contact with our kids about that. Let's have a look at you.
There are a few warning signs that we would say, if these are happening, y'all need to throw a flag and sit down and have some conversations with your kids. Deleting text messages, passwords being changed, the camera roll being deleted, accounts being set to private without your knowledge, and staying up late utilizing devices. These are times that we, just as parents, as clinicians, we have to go, what are they hiding, and why are they hiding? Ben explained this really well in the last class, but there's no burden of proof necessary for parents in that. So if y'all think that some text messages have been deleted, then a conversation can be had. You don't necessarily have to call AT&T and, like, dig up all the text messages and have this conversation. Like, y'all as parents, you know, hold the trump card and get to say, no, like, we're going to sit down and talk about this. We're going to set some consequences. We're going to get to consequences in a few minutes. Know that short and effective is so much better than long term. I know impulsively there are times that even with my two-year-old, I want to take that toy away forever. Well, if you to your 16-year-old say you're grounded from your phone for the next 2 months, you might as well have just, like, ruined the social life forever for him. And so, like, we just want to make sure that we create an understanding of short and effective is really great. But it doesn't mean that other things don't have to change within their lives of how they use their phone and the apps that they're allowed to use their phone if any of these warning signs are happening. One of the main arguments that I see, and most of the time it's with female clients and their moms, is, Mom, I'm not turning on my phone at night because I have to have it for an alarm clock. And I, like, feel awesome every time because I'm like, I got this one. It's called go to Walmart, buy a really normal alarm clock, and turn in your phone. Like, it's just not rocket science. Statistically, we see that adolescents need sleep. They're not getting enough sleep. Their school structure is not necessarily set up to see them succeed because they have to go to school at 8 a.m. or even earlier. They would prefer to stay up till midnight or 1 and sleep till 10 or 11, wouldn't we all? You know, but that's not real life. And so I really, really, really encourage parents when I am meeting with them to have a curfew for the device and turn it in. Like, it's okay. The world keeps spinning. You know, I grew up with a landline, and I saw friends, and I got married. You know, like, it's okay. So we're going to cover just a few of the acronyms, which are another few warning signs. Here's what I want to preface with. There are more acronyms out there that I could even read. Like, I was, like, so overwhelmed by all of the potential acronyms. And I know some kids would find these, like, absolutely ridiculous. Like, if we polled student ministries over there, some of them may be like, I don't even know what that means. But some kids absolutely do know what they mean, and they're using them. And so I wanted to make sure that we highlighted a few of those. PIR is parent in room. And then POS, MOS, or FOS is parent over the shoulder or mother or father over the shoulder. This would often be sent if they were, you know, in an inappropriate conversation or something. And then in real life, or LMIRL, let's meet in real life. And then one that we see a lot is 143, especially with, you know, cute little boyfriend and girlfriend. They want a cute way to say, I love you. Well, you probably need to be conversing with your kids if you see 143, just because those are big words that mean a lot. So the constant changing acronyms, you and I could never keep up with. So parentingteens.about.com, which we will give you in an email after this class, is super helpful to understand all the acronyms that are out there. Obviously, like LOL and those things still are around, but you don't necessarily need to worry about those. So.
Yeah, I mean, parentingteens.about.com is one of those great resources because we have to stay current. You know, we can give information today and we can give new information in 6 months. As parents, we have to stay current. And so knowing those resources is really important. Three big ideas about discipline regarding technology: short, effective, and well-defined. Like Sav mentioned, whether it's faith-based researchers or secular researchers, all the data agrees that long-term technology punishment makes things worse than it makes better. And here's why. It creates a sense of hopelessness for our kids. If I've lost my phone for 2 months, then why follow the rules anyway? Life is over. That's how a 15-year-old thinks. And so that loss of hopelessness makes the consequence then in turn ineffective. Instead, what we want is, you know what, I lost all my screen access for 48 hours. I can't use anything with the screen for 48 hours. But if I can keep it together and fall back in line for 48 hours, I'm going to get stuff back. That's great feedback for kids, feeling the natural consequences of losing access to so many things for a short period of time, but having the hope that it's going to get better is great feedback for kids on improving behavior and decision making.
And the only thing to add to that is it also helps adults feel like they're completely capable of follow through.
Yeah, that's a great point.
Because a lot of times with a 2 month grounding or even a week grounding sometimes is really hard to not give in to the, oh, he's going to the game. Well, he needs his phone, you know, to call me after practice. So short and effective helps the consistency and follow through for parents.
For sure. Yes, absolutely. I mean, punishment differs from child to child for sure. But for the child that really, you know, loves technology, then that's going to be a punishment that has a little sting to it and a little appropriate bite, and so it's good. There's other kids that don't care about technology and they want to be outside all day long, which is awesome. But taking away their phone for 2 days may mean nothing to them. So we just got to know our child, but it can be for sure. Yeah. Two other big ideas about discipline. Going back to that idea of is this right or not for my child? Every kid is different. You've got to find the punishment that makes sense for your child. For some kids, it may be the Xbox. For other kids, it may be the cell phone. For other kids, it may be the iPad. Use a little trial and error. Figure out what motivates your child to make better decisions and use that device. The last is well-defined, and this one's really critical to me. One of the biggest mistakes that I make as a parent and one of the biggest mistakes that I see clients of mine make as parents is we put that we put kind of ambiguous terms on what discipline is. You better stop that or you're going to get punished. And they're going, well, what am I, you know, what's that going to look like? What kind of punishment am I going to get? Is it really going to be bad? Because if it's not, I may just keep going. We've got to take a step back, decide what the appropriate punishment is for something, and communicate that really clearly with our child and not negotiate. To Sav's point, if you're gonna say, hey, a week with no cell phone, take a few minutes and digest that, look at the calendar, and make sure you really feel like that's something that you want to put your name behind. Because it sets up a bad parenting cycle with our children if we're putting punishments in place, discipline in place, and not following through with those things.
Yeah, just to give one idea, because it's been helpful for a lot of adolescent parents. It seems really silly, but I promise it works. Sometimes to buy time to either talk with your spouse or calm down enough after an offense to create a real consequence, a great thing to do is to create a chore bucket. Just get a little mason jar and come up with all the random chores in your house that aren't necessarily assigned to your children. Maybe it's cleaning baseboards. Maybe it's alphabetizing DVDs. Maybe it's pulling weeds. Like, we all have the absolute most random chores ever. And those are great, short, effective, well-defined things that they have to do immediately. And then it gives you some time to think and to come up with a real consequence for the offense. They're great for when kids talk back. They're great for when they're rolling their eyes. They just pull a chore. They do the chore. Everything's okay. But it also can buy you some time if you need a few minutes to create a real consequence. Yeah. And your house gets clean, so.
We're going to use...
Good advice,
It depends child to child. I mean, there's definitely and situation to situation. It's going to depend on, you know, what's going on in the home. Using that data that you've gotten from previous moments of discipline to go, you know what, 2 weeks made him hopeless and things got worse. So maybe I'll go a little shorter than that. Or 2 days didn't really seem like it stung enough, so I may need to do a little more than that.
And you could switch things like, I'm going to give him 2 weeks from the iPhone, but he gets a Go phone where he can call or text me if he has to have it. You know, there are ways that with certain technology, because some offenses really do need more time, but it's you have to understand like how to keep them still engrossed in their world.
We're going to use the last two slides to get as practical as we can. One big practical idea is that we've got to know the current landscape is constantly changing and strive to stay current. We're going to give you, the next slide is a few websites to stay current, but know that there's a principle that what we know today is not enough to help our kids tomorrow. We've got to strive to stay current all the time. Recognize that 100% monitoring is impossible. Since Fellowship has been advertising this, I've gotten 3 emails asking me, what's the best IT solution for completely monitoring every screen, every app, every text, everything? And I'm like, there is not one. There's some really terrible free advice. You can't do it. There's no answer. No matter how covered up we are, if we've got router-level filtering, we've got filtering on the devices, and we use a great website like X3 Church, and we've done all these things to try to help our kids, maybe we can get like 60% covered up. And that leaves this gap. And the only answer for that gap, going back to Matt Chandler's quote at the beginning, is our, as parents, personal relationships with Jesus and our personal relationships with our kids. That's the only thing that can fill that void, because you cannot fully protect your children. They will be out of your home, around other kids. They will have apps that you don't know about. So the only way to feed that gap is to constantly be nourishing your own relationship with Jesus and your relationship with your child, to constantly be building that sense of connection with them. Sav and I think have both said now that all phones and screens are turned in overnight. I said it in the first one, and I'll say it again now. I'm glad that I did not have a smartphone in my room as a 15-year-old boy. I don't know where that would have led, and I don't really want to know. But I am thankful that that wasn't there, and I will know for sure that I'm not going to put my son at that risk to where he's got open access to the internet over his phone or a computer late at night. It's a recipe for disaster, and it happens all the time. That's a place where we just have to protect our children. Have an internet filter. We can't be fully buttoned up, but we can button up some buttons, and this is one we can get. We'll give you a specific one that you can check out on the next slide. But putting some filters on the internet to grab some of that entry point things that we need to protect our kids from is a great thing to do. Set clear boundaries, devices, open hours, content privacy, things like that. Have that conversation with your kids. Let them know exactly what the boundaries are, what you're expecting from them. Get involved. Get an account. Participate in your child's online life. We are called as a part of being in relationship with our kids to be where they are, to meet them where they're at. One of our attendees in the first session said, we wouldn't give our kids the keys to the car without riding around with them a little bit first and making sure they knew how everything worked. And to do that, we've got to know how to drive the car. And so we've got to have the same approach with technology. We've got to be involved and have a presence. Another thing, have technology-free family time. Show your kids that you deeply value time away from all technology. Have a basket at the table at the dinner table where you turn your phones in. And mom and dad, put your devices in there first. Have a technology-free weekend where you go, you know what, we're going to go to a state park and we're not taking any phones with us. Or we'll take them, but we're going to leave them we're going to leave them put up and off. We're not taking the computer. Value technology-free nights or weekends, time together as a family. And then the final thing is practice what you preach. Everything that we've talked about doesn't matter if you're not doing it yourself. we have a filter on our internet at home, because when our kids get that age, we want it to already be there. I have a passcode on my phone, but my wife knows it, because we want to show our kids that we don't get to these levels of privacy just because it's my phone. We've got to be willing to show our kids that we're going to put our money where our mouth is, and we're going to follow the rules. If phones are going in the basket at night, your phone has to go in there too. Show your kids that you're willing to do what they're going to do. Some helpful sites, iParent.tv. Here's the second thing that I'll say. If you've never done it, go home. Think about going home and doing it tonight. iParent.tv is a wonderful, wonderful resource for parents for staying current. It has great videos that tell you what kids are doing with apps, how they're using them, whether they're being used for good or used for bad, for warning signs. It is a wonderful website that you really should check out. It's really user-friendly, and I would recommend that you go home and check that out even tonight. OpenDNS, this is the filter that we've had at our home for years now. Great Fayetteville or fellowship guy, John Pruitt, put it on our computer a long time ago. OpenDNS is at the router, at the modem level, cuts off all inappropriate material. So not only pornography, but also things about suicide or gambling, all these topics that we wouldn't want our kids researching, it cuts them off. Now, it doesn't cut off cell phone being used on cellular data, right? Because that's not touching the router. So that's an example where we're not totally buttoned up, but we can take good earnest efforts to get more buttoned up. X3 Watch by xxxchurch.com. Smartphone, tablet, computer, internet filters. That's on the device, not at the internet level, but at the device level, where it's screening sexually explicit material. It's a good service. It and OpenDNS, not free, but good services.
And it's one where if somebody tries to view it, an adult or a teenager, it'll send an email to three email addresses, up to three email addresses that you pick. Mm-hmm. So that way you can know if they're even trying to search certain things.
Mm-hmm. And if you've never been to xxxchurch.com, it's a great website. It's got lots of good data specific to pornography. And so I'd encourage you to check that one out as well. Two other ones that we've used is netsmarts.org. They've got good information, and the American Academy of Pediatrics has a great one, safetynet.aap.org.
Both of those are really filled with more links that will kind of send you to other websites that are helpful. So they're kind of more of a database of information.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. All right, so we've protected about 10 minutes here at the end for some questions. So who has a question that they want to ask?
What about
YouTube?
Is there any way that you can filter YouTube?
YouTube on an iPhone, you can – the question was about what about YouTube. The iPhone allows you to add some restrictions. The unfortunate thing about that is if you enable restrictions, if they know the passcode, they can deactivate that restriction. If it's on an iPad and it's, say it's your iPad and it's a smaller child, I would say absolutely. I also know that Apple recently created a guided access option. Again, I don't think that's going to filter for a teenager on his own personal phone, but if it's a younger child, you can turn on guided access and triple click the home button, and it prevents them from going other places. So like I set Elmo on YouTube, my two-year-old can't go away from the Elmo option. So
and even the problem with a site like YouTube and limiting the access is if they're on a PC, they can log out of that account and sign into another account that you may not know about and have access again.
Yeah. You had a question?
It would not limit an inappropriate show from Netflix. It would limit if you went to like the YouTube one and tried to search something fairly explicit there. But no, it would not cut off shows from a site like Netflix. Yeah, yeah. Yes. Yes.
Yes. I wish. I haven't found one yet because I mean, I have the same issue.
Yeah.
Like, I wish when they clicked on our account, they could put in our password and that would be effective.
Yeah, that would be nice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's true.
That's true. You can see what they previously watched.
Yeah.
Windows Family Safety? Yeah. I have not.
I don't.
Okay, it comes with Windows.
Okay.
We've been using it on our kids' computer. It kind of came with Windows, and it's like, it used to be built into the computer. Now it's like everything is kind of a cloud-based.
Mm-hmm.
I just didn't know if you ever showed that.
Yeah, I'm a Mac user, so I'm not super familiar with Microsoft. But
Something that's probably similar to that is Web Watchers. A lot of people have heard of Web Watchers. Is kind of a monitor all screens. The reviews on that are completely mixed. Some are great. Some are not great.
Right.
I'd rather have them safe than not, but I gotta like authorize every website.
Well, right. And you know what? The deal is, we're just pushing the envelope further down the desk, right? And so our kids are just going one level deeper to do something that they're not supposed to if they need to. And that's why we stress the relationship. As unfortunate of an answer that is, we cannot button everything up.
And we didn't necessarily. I think we touched on this briefly, but allowing an avenue for your kids to come to you and say, hey, Mom, I clicked on that ad and I accidentally saw, you know, a woman naked. It's a really awkward and hard conversation for your child to come and have with you. But that grace and that honesty and authenticity, if you can navigate those well, what you do is you set the foundation for those future conversations too. Because unfortunately, we talked about this in the last class, 8, 9, 10-year-olds are talking about sex and they are able to find images and it's terrifying. But what's more terrifying is the people that are responsible for parenting them not having those conversations. And that starts at an early age of them understanding what sex even is. But it's just about, I mean, I call it embracing the awkwardness. You know, it's okay to blush a little bit. It's okay to not necessarily know the exact right thing to say, but say something and be okay with the fact that they came to you, you know, and allow that to be a safe environment.
Yeah.
Peer groups.
Yeah.
This is probably the, sure. I'm guessing I'm not alone, one of the scariest things for us, no matter what we do in our own home,
mm-hmm.
and what
yeah.
we teach our kids, and we, you know, try to implement something that we can't.
Sure.
The fact of the matter is a lot of the days spent at school with their friends, mm-hmm. when we say, yeah, you can go to your friend's house.
Yeah.
Maybe their friend go to church and stuff, but who knows what, you know what
I'm saying?
Yeah. Who knows what their child
yeah.
is asked to.
So there is no IT answer there. It's completely relational and conversational. Somebody asked the question last time, like how do we get going in that conversation with our kids? And a great one that I have parents do is talk to them about, even if they're younger, hey, pictures are on the internet that shouldn't be there. They're inappropriate. If it's something that should be covered up by a swimsuit, then that's something that we feel like we shouldn't be looking at. And so if somebody shows you that, will you tell me about that? You won't be in trouble, but will you please tell me if somebody shows you a picture of something that should be covered up by a swimsuit? And then I think it's a great time to go ahead and ask a curious question to say, hey, right now, has anybody ever shown you a picture of something that should be covered up by a swimsuit? You're not going to be in trouble for it. I want to know about it so that we can talk about it. Absolutely, some relationships are going to have to be limited. I think that's a great time to join with the other parent and say, "Hey, we're not mad. We just found out about this. If it was me, I'd want to know. So I wanted to tell you about what's going on. And then you have to turn to prayer and discernment about how to handle those relationships going forward.
And unfortunately, with younger children and early adolescents, that gap of curiosity versus like impulsivity is real small. Like, mm-hmm. I mean, kids just Google random things that they think mm-hmm. about, you know, why do bunnies, you know, reproduce so quickly? And then all of a sudden it's like, well, oh my word, they just opened Pandora's box of mm-hmm. all this inappropriate sexual content. And so navigating with your kids that gray space of, was it curiosity, or, you know, had they been exposed to it from a friend? Mm-hmm. And then, yeah, I think you have to navigate those relationships and put some boundaries there, not casting judgment necessarily on the parents, but doing what you need to do mm-hmm. to protect your kids. Also, one-on-one time with your kids is a great way to have those conversations. If you have multiple children, once a month, set up one-on-one time with your kid. It is one of the most fruitful things that you can do because they do want to talk to you. It may not seem like they do, and it may take a couple of times of individual time together, but they will want to talk to you.
Other questions? Yeah.
What age do you recommend the smartphone?
We're two for two. Yeah, we got it last time, too.
There is no right answer. One of the things that we navigated last class was I think that when your children become involved in sports and extracurricular activities, there are safety reasons for a phone, but that does not necessarily have to mean a smartphone. I encourage parents to always dialogue with their kids about why they want a smartphone. I've even had an adolescent with her parents present a presentation. Awesome, like really, really well thought out, you know, where there's some great dialogue. But we want to make sure we're not idolizing a smartphone because that's just not the goal.
Yeah, and I think it differs from child to child too. You know, has the child proven to you to be very trustworthy over time, or do they struggle with sometimes, you know, being deceitful or hiding things from you? That would push that back a little bit. And then I love the idea of starting with a very simple phone, a non-smartphone, and maybe all it can do is text and call. And you say, hey, how you handle this dictates when and what access you get to the smartphone that you inevitably want. So a lot of parents...
But I'll say this, even if they don't have a smartphone, if y'all have a tablet, know that the tablets can do just as many of the apps as the iPhone, and so y'all have to guard those. I mean, it can text anybody. So even if your child doesn't have a phone, if they have an iPad, they pretty much have a phone. So
that's what we've been able to do is if they want a phone that mom and dad pay for, they get a flip phone. There's usually one left somewhere and every carrier uses that only one.
Yeah.
but then they have tablets too. And that kind of helps with the whole, they don't have cellular data access on a tablet.
Right.
Totally. And then they have a phone that they always text with.
Yeah.
Totally.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're separate.
Yeah, that's great.
And I said this last time, but really encourage your kids, and I'm super guilty of this, but we have lost the art of actually calling people on the telephone. Encourage your children if there's, you know, if they're going, you know, to a birthday party or something, to actually call that person rather than sending them a text. We want to make sure that we are raising children that know how to dialogue with humans, not just expect, you know, a quick text. And I'm guilty of it. Ben's guilty of it. We're all guilty of it because of the ease of text messaging. But there's something to be said about that awkwardness of picking up the phone and, you know, how to handle that.
Yeah.
Obviously, because I explained the situation all that, have you guys had any helpful hints of what you can do to make that a little bit easier for them to understand?
I think that's really difficult. I don't want to over-spiritualize it, and I definitely don't want to take this verse out of context, but I think the idea of to whom much is given, much is required is a really good idea of the older children are, the more responsibility they're given, the more privileges they're given, the more opportunities they're given. And so it only makes sense then the consequences feel more severe because they have more opportunities. And so just helping them understand that even though their consequence feels, you know, much stronger, they have a lot more opportunities than little sister, you know, who feels left out. So,
and I would just remember that teenagers are going to push on the wall somewhere. It's just a matter of which wall they're going to push on. And, you know, if she was an only child, she'd be comparing it to the punishments that friends at school got. they're going to push on the wall somewhere. And so just remember that you don't have to prove your decision, that you get to make a confident decision, that you're going to stand by as a parent, and just to feel a little bit of a freedom from making sure that you handle every objection that they have, because you won't be able to inevitably.
And to prevent future wounds, just make sure the consequences stay consistent throughout each child's life. So that daughter can't come back to you in 10 years and go, "Well, I remember that you did this," and all of a sudden you just make sure you try as best you can to stay consistent. Because I think that makes sense.
We've got time for one more if anybody else has one. Nope. Great. Well, thanks for coming and listening, and hope it was helpful. And we'll get you guys an email with some of the stuff.